Hello and happy holidays from the Old Time Radio Hour. I'm your host, Justine Ward, and this week we're celebrating with some heartwarming Christmas stories. We'll start with an episode of The Shadow that echoes the Charles Dickens story, A Christmas Carol. The Shadow uses his superpower to help a miser understand the folly of his ways and right a mysterious wrong. After that, we have a tale of a medieval French Christmas miracle by Family Theater. The Shadow was one of the most popular shows on old-time radio during the 1930s and 40s. Enjoy The Shadow. The Stockings Were Hung, first broadcast December 24th, 1939 on Mutual.
Shadow, mysterious character who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. The Shadow uses his hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so that they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the unseen voice of the Shadow belongs. Today's story, The Stockings Were Hung. This is a story of Christmas time in a great city. Tonight, with Margot Lane and Lamont Cranston, we look in on the lives of the Grover family.
Get out of here. Get out. You'll not get a cent of pay from me, Mr. Grover.
Simon Jordan, you know my wife's dead, and I have two children. And it's Christmas. I've got
to. Get out before I...
It's Christmas time in a great city. As our scene opens, we find Margot and Lamont coming down on the elevator from Margot's apartment.
Well, here's where we get out, Margot.
Where now?
Over to the club, Lamont, to pick up a Christmas basket of food to deliver.
Good.
Oh, look, Lamont, it's snowing.
What do you think of that?
I want to stop at the corner and see my friend Spike.
Spike?
Yes, Spike Grover. He's a newsboy. I always buy my papers for him. There's Spike on the corner.
Busy little man, isn't he?
I always give him $5 for Christmas.
In spite of all you've said about organized charity, giving one isolated newsboy $5.
Oh, but Lamont, this is different.
Get your papers.
I should say it is different. It isn't even Spike.
Paper, mister, paper.
Yes, the young lady would like a paper to cover her new hat. If you can call that Christmas tree ornament a hat.
Where's Spike Grover?
Spike's got family trouble. He's a pal of mine, Spike. He tells me everything. He knows I can keep a secret.
Family trouble?
Well, it's very confidential. You see, Spike and his sister Jane, you see, they haven't got any mother. They only got a father. And you see, I don't tell anybody, but Spike's grandfather owned a Grover Importing Company.
Wait a minute. You're way ahead of me.
Now, look. Spike's grandfather owned a Grover Importing business, and Spike's name is Grover. So Spike and his father should own the Grover Importing business. And, well, it seems there's a fellow named Jordan worked for Spike's grandfather. And the way I figure it, this fellow Jordan put the snatch on the whole business.
Did what?
Lady, you wouldn't understand. I was just telling this gentleman here. As far as I can figure, this old miser named Jordan steals the whole business right out from under Spike's father's nose. So a couple of days ago, Jordan fired Spike's father from his own business, mind you. Ain't that awful?
But where's Spike?
And where's his father?
Lady, if I knew that, I'd tell Spike.
Well, where does he live?
He lives in the old house down on South and 7th Street.
What's your name, son?
They call me Gabby. But you know, I could never figure out why.
No. Well, Gabby, here's a Christmas present for you.
Oh, thanks. Gee, thanks, mister.
Merry Christmas, Gabby.
And the same to you, lady.
Bye. Well, you go over to your club and pick up the Christmas basket, Margot. I think I'll go down and see Spike and family. I'll pick you up at the club, Margot. A cab.
You want a cab, mister? You want a cab?
Yes. Take me to South and 7th Street, please.
South and 7th Street, yes. South and 7th.
Thanks. Oh, by the way, I want to stop at a pet shop on the way. Do you know a good one nearby?
Well, I don't know where that is. There's one. Oh, yeah, I do know where there's one in the next block, that is.
Well, that's where we're going, then. Oh, driver, are you busy tonight?
Yeah, yeah, I got to drive this cab. Ain't it awful, ain't it?
That's what I mean. That's what I... Now you've got me doing it.
Doing what?
Hiring the cab for tonight.
You mean it?
Sure.
Gee, Santa Claus. I didn't know you without them whiskers. That's a joke. Hey, there's a pet shop, mister. There it is.
Well, that's fine. Thanks. What's your name?
Louis.
Well, come on, Louis. Let's buy a pup.
Buy a pup, huh? Buy a pup, old boy. Hey, the red one in the window?
Sold, Louis, sold.
Oh, that's a cute pup. That's a cute pup, all right.
How much is the red set of pup in the window?
Oh, that's a very fine animal. $35.
Fine. Wrap it up.
I beg your pardon?
Put it in a cardboard carton with some holes in it. We'll take it with us.
Very good, sir.
Well, now, Louis, you'll take the pup in front, see? It's a surprise for a young lady we'll pick up later. She mustn't know about it.
Yeah, yeah, sure, sure. Say, but suppose it begins to bark or whine or something?
Well, if she asks what it is, you just tell her a box of books.
Hey, yeah, yeah, that's smart. But wait a minute. What kind of books am I going to say if it starts to bark?
Oh, that's easy. You just call for sneeze.
Believe me, mister, if you didn't want this hack for the evening, I tell you, it sounds a little screwy to me, I tell you.
Hey, here's your dog, sir. Fine animal indeed.
Louis, sneeze.
Huh?
Sneeze.
Oh.
Is that right?
Thanks.
Great, Louis, great. Take the box of books now. We're off to South and 7th Street.
Mother would be very mad if I didn't make these cookies just perfect for Daddy. Let me see. Here it is, Mother's recipe for Christmas cookies. 1 1/4 cups of flour. I've got that. 1 1/2 teaspoons of vanilla. Maybe nobody would notice if there's no vanilla in them. 1/3 cup of sugar. 1 egg. And 1/2 cup of butter. 1/2 cup of butter? I haven't even got half of a half a cup of butter. And I wanted so much to surprise Daddy.
Well, that's no way to feel on Christmas Eve. What's the matter, Jamie?
I haven't got hardly any butter.
Well, we'll take care of that in a minute, Jamie. But I came here looking for your brother Kingsley.
But I don't know where my brother is because he's looking for my father. And I don't know where my father is. Daddy hasn't been home for 2 whole days.
Oh, easy, Jamie.
Well, Kingsley says Daddy will be home for Christmas.
I'm sure he will.
But now Kingsley's gone, and I haven't any butter, and Mother always makes such good Christmas cookies.
Well, now look, Jamie. I think this will give you all the butter you want and anything else you might need for your Christmas cookies.
Oh, it's $5.
You can't expect me to find your father and Kingsley if you don't have Christmas cookies ready for them when they come home.
Will you really bring them home?
I'll try, Jenny. I'll try.
Hey, hey, is this where we picked the young lady up?
Yes, Louie. And don't forget, that's a box of books you have in front and not a dog. And don't forget, if he barks, you sneeze.
Okay, okay.
Well, there's Miss Lane now. Oh, Margot. Been waiting long?
Oh, no, no, Lamont. Whew, I just piled the snow on my best hat so I look like the spirit of Christmas.
Oh, it's gunshot.
Did you deliver your last basket?
Yes. What's that package you have in front, driver?
Oh, I got it. a box of books. I got a box of books.
Oh. Well, I thought you'd never get here.
The South and 7th Street, Louis. That's Spike's house, Margo. You wait here, Louis.
Yeah, sure, boss. Sure, sure.
Margo, this is Spike's house.
That's
the one. Let's go in and see Jamie, huh?
Good. I want to meet her.
Lamont, look. There's 2 boys of fire.
And that smaller boy is Spike.
It is. Hey, you youngsters.
Look on that tree. It's mine.
Stop picking on him, you big bully.
Oh, scram.
See, Miss Lane, I found this tree.
You did not.
Come on, you young hoodlums.
My God.
Hey, now, wait a minute. One at a time.
I saw it in the gutter.
Listen, young man. I suggest that you run along and let Spike have his tree.
Who's going to make me?
Why, you young rat scoundrel.
Oh, Lamont, remember, peace on earth.
I'll get you, Spike, when you haven't got your gang with you.
What a piece of the society column. The well-known clubman, Lamont Cranston, seen brawling. Ow! Why, that hit me with a snowball.
Remember, Margot, peace on earth.
Well, if you were half a man, you'd do something about it.
Never let it be said.
Well, here, you're not going to throw a snowball at him.
It wouldn't look well if I shot him, would it?
Boy, what a whale.
Ouch! Hey, who do you think you are, Lefty Gomez or something? I'll get you, Spike.
Mister, it isn't even a good Christmas tree.
Oh, Spike, it's a beautiful tree.
It hasn't got many needles, but you got to have a Christmas tree when you got a girl in the house.
You're right, Kingsley.
Kingsley, have you been talking to my sister?
Yes.
Nothing's happened to my dad, you haven't?
Why, of course not. We know your dad's missing, so we just came down to help.
Have you any idea where your father is, Spike?
Oh, gee. He'll show up.
Have you been to the place where he works?
I mean, where he used to work. That old stink went Mr. Jordan won't let him work there anymore.
I see. Have you asked the police for help?
Well, that's just the trouble, Mr. Cranston. I can't.
Why not, Spike?
Oh, it's kind of private.
Well, here, you must tell us or we won't be able to help you.
Well, all right. See, I went there yesterday and Mr. Jordan said he hadn't seen Dad. And when he did, he was going to have him thrown in jail.
What?
Yeah. Mr. Jordan said my dad did something to the books or something, and that he was a thief. My dad wouldn't do anything like that.
I'm sure he wouldn't, Spike.
Bet he wouldn't. Especially because that business really belongs to him, and it's supposed to belong to me someday when I get big. If anybody's a thief, it's that old skinflint Mr. Jordan.
Now, look, Spike. The first thing we've got to do is to find your father.
Yeah.
The best thing to do is to get the police to help us.
Oh, but maybe they'll arrest him.
But you and I both know that your dad didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe they can find him, huh? Maybe they can find him.
I'm sure they can. You tell me what he looks like. Then you and Miss Lane go in the house, and I'll go to police headquarters.
Good evening, Sergeant Murphy.
Well, well. Season's greetings to you, Mr. Cranston.
Same to you. Sergeant, Kingsley Grover Sr. has been missing for 2 days.
Tell me what he looks like, and we'll start looking.
His son Spike told me that he was 5'10", weighed about 165, was wearing brown overalls.
Calling all cars, missing since last Friday, Kingsley Grover Sr., height 5 feet.
Harbor Patrol.
This is headquarters. We're looking for Kingsley Grover Sr., height 5 feet 10. Wait. Cheerful. Headquarters calling. Merry Christmas. Have you got a stiff on ice about 5'10"? Wait.
Hello, Ray.
Hello, Mr. Cranston. Did you find out anything about Spike's old man at police headquarters?
No, not yet. Miss Lane's still in the house?
Yeah. She's there with Spike and his sister. Say, the dog's all right. I didn't have to sneeze or nothing. He was so quiet, I thought he was froze or something. So put my hand inside the box. You know what happened?
No.
He bit my finger. He's a card, all right. He's a card.
Keep up the good work, Louie. I'm going in the house.
Okay, boss. Okay.
Hello, everybody.
Oh, come on here. You were gone a long time, Mr. Cranston. The police find him?
They'll get him soon, Spike. Don't be impatient, now.
No, I won't be impatient. Say, would it be bad if you and Miss Lane went into the other room for a minute? I want to talk to my sister. Do you mind?
No, of course not, Spike. Come on with me, Lamont.
It'll only be a second.
Take your time, Spike.
Look at Johnny. We'll find him in time for Christmas.
And still the search for Spike's father goes on. The machine of the police looking everywhere. Hours pass, and no word. Now we find Kingsley going up to old Mr. Jordan's office.
Mr. Jordan!
Who is it? It's you, is it? Get out of here.
Please tell me where my father is.
I don't know where that thieving father of yours is if I did.
He's not a thief. If anybody's a thief, you are.
You shut your lying, dirty mouth.
You stole my father's business. He should be here, not you.
I'll flash you within an inch of your life, you little gut of shite.
Please don't hit me with that chain again, please.
You don't like that,
please.
And that.
Please stop it.
kid. How did you get that red welt across your cheek?
Mr. Jordan hit me with his cane.
Oh, you poor child. Come here, I'll wash it out.
Now we have to plan what we're going to do. Have you any suggestions, Spike?
Only one, Mr. Cranston.
What's that?
Well, it sounds kind of silly, maybe even to try it, but you see, Dad and I, we always used to walk up the avenue on Christmas Eve.
Oh, it sings a little, doesn't it?
It's all right. Well, anyway, we'd look in the store windows and we'd see what we'd buy for ourselves and Janie and Mother when she was alive. We had all the money we wanted. I thought I'd walk up the avenue tonight. And... well, I guess it sounds kind of silly, but I would like to.
That's a wonderful idea, Kingsley. And Margo.
Yes, Lamont.
Why don't you go along and take a pencil and paper and write down all the things Spike would like for himself and his sister?
We never did that.
No? Well, just think what fun you'd have. Talking it over with Janie afterwards if you had a list.
Gee, that's right. Let's go. Wait, you know, we might even run into Dad.
Well, sure you might.
Aren't you coming with us, Mr. Cranston?
Well, yes, of course. I'll join you on the avenue. But first, I want to get to police station again and check up.
Oh, Janie.
Yes, Kingsley?
You better stay here and watch those cookies don't burn again.
All right.
I'll be with you in a little while.
The books for tonight. I've had a good year. Who's there? No one. I guess I'll give myself a Christmas present of a new latch for the door. That Grover brat must have left it open. He's too smart, that boy. You don't have to worry about any Grovers ever again, Simon Jordan. Simon Jordan. That's going to look fine in new gilt letters on the door. Instead of Grover's Important Company. You're pretty slick, Simon Jordan. These books are fixed so cleverly that even the Supreme Court couldn't tell that Simon Jordan didn't own this company. Hey, what was that? Who said that?
No one said anything, Simon Jordan. I was just enjoying your joke with you.
Now, where are you? I can hear your voice.
Of course you can hear my voice, Simon Jordan. But you can't see me. I'm in the shadows. The shadows of your mind.
Go away. Go away from me.
I thought you might be lonely.
No, I'm not. Go on, go away.
I came to ask you about the Grovers.
Hey? What do you know about the Grovers?
Enough, Simon Jordan. Enough to know that your altered books would not fool the Supreme Court.
Hey? You're not a spirit, are you?
In a sense, yes. I try to represent the spirit of honesty and justice. And when Simon Jordan beats a child with his cane, steals from the father of that child like a low, sneaking thief, then I must talk to Simon Jordan.
I'm not a thief.
No. I should not disgrace thieves by calling you one of them.
Hey?
You're a man too mean to be a thief, Jordan.
Yeah.
What do you want from this world?
None of your business what I want.
I'll tell you. You want money. Nothing but money. I feel sorry for you, Simon.
Oh.
I'm going to go now. But I want to leave one thought with you.
Eh?
You're an old man. You don't have much longer to live.
What?
All your life's work is your money. It's rather an empty victory, isn't it? You're alone in the world. Your money doesn't do anyone any good, Simon Jordan.
Eh?
But you can rest easy in your shriveled soul because the Grovers will be taken care of. The Shadow will take care of them.
The Shadow.
There they are, Louie. Stop here. Margo, Spike. Hello.
Hello there, Lamont.
Oh, I thought I'd never pick you up.
Well, we're beginning to worry, too.
How are things down at the police station?
Well, not much news yet, Spike. But they've got a couple of leads that might amount to something.
That's good.
Are you pretty near the end of your Christmas Eve walk, Spike?
We've got one more stop. Pop and me always stopped in here at the cathedral, you know, just to get out of the cold for a minute. You don't have to be afraid. They'll let you in.
If you take it, they will, Spike.
Up these steps.
Lamont, I didn't know there were as many windows in town. I'm dead. I've got a list of presents as long as... Oh, here's your arm.
Don't slip, Miss Lane.
I hope you've got a preferred list.
Oh, I have.
Here, in here. Why, this door's heavy.
Oh, when Jesus was born, this man's
come back here and listen.
All right, Spike.
Look, Lamont, that poor man over the corner.
Yes.
Mr.
Cranston,
it's my dad.
What?
It's my dad. Dad, speak to me. Speak to me. You won't speak to me.
Mr. Grover. Mr. Grover, this is your son. Don't you know him?
Yes.
I can't remember, Margot. This man has been hurt.
Let's get him outside, Lamont.
Do you remember your name, sir?
Gee, there's something wrong with him.
My name? You must try to remember. Truck. Skidding. Hit me. Why did you come to the cathedral tonight?
It's Christmas Eve. Always come here.
Who is we?
I can't remember.
Miss Lane leaves some packages with you?
Did she leave some packages? Did she leave some? She dumped them in the back of the hack and went to the kids. Spike, was talking all the way down about your father's old man. Is that the kid's old man with you?
Yes, he's in pretty good shape now.
Oh, gee, that's the nice that sent me is.
Now, Louie, don't forget to bring in those packages when I call you. All right, now, Mr. Grover. Just lean on me. You're still a little bit shaky.
I know it.
Now, watch the steps.
I'm all right, thank you.
Yeah, you're fine now. All right. You go first.
Merry Christmas, children.
Daddy! Oh!
How is the lady of the house?
Oh, it's just wonderful now that you're here. Oh, Daddy. And I make Christmas cookies, too.
Fine, fine. And how about you, young man? How have you been behaving?
I've been getting along all right.
Where did you get that nasty welt across your cheek? You haven't been in a fight, have you, son?
Oh, I'll go. Oh, no, sir. It was only an accident.
Mr. Jordan, what are you doing here?
I came to speak on a matter of business.
I don't believe this is the occasion for a business discussion.
Oh, I think it is, Mr. Grover. In going over the books tonight, I found that a great and terrible mistake has been made.
Huh?
The Grover Importing Company has been making more money than I thought, and over half of it is rightfully yours as partner in the company.
Partner?
Yes, part owner. And I hope you will find it within your heart to forget any misunderstandings we may have had and that you take over the responsibilities of partnership immediately. Yes. Yes, that's all I've got to say. Good night, and Merry Christmas to you all.
Oh, how can such an awful old man say such beautiful things?
Well, we haven't time to talk about whether he's awful or not. We have things to do.
Louie! Well, you don't have to yell. You don't have to yell. I'm right here. I'm right here. I got all the stuff right with me.
Good. Bring it right in.
Look, presents. Are they for us?
Quiet, Jamie. Of course they're not.
But they are, Kingsley.
Oh, don't kid me, Mr. Cranston.
You're not getting fired.
I don't know how I can ever repay you for what you, Miss Lane, and Mr. Cranston have done tonight.
We've been more than repaid, I assure you. Louie, don't bring that in here. I didn't tell you I wanted you to bring that in.
It was my own idea, and I'm not even going to have to sneeze.
Well, oh, I dropped.
Oh, Lamont, you're a darling. Did you get that puppy?
Well, yes.
Gee, is that for us, too?
Why... Oh, why, of course, Spike. Mr. Cranston got that for you as a surprise.
Margot, hear ye. It's about time for all three of you, and that means you too, Mr. Grover, to sit down and open some packages. We've got to go. You ready, Margot? Where's Louie?
He went outside.
Merry Christmas to you all, and to you all, good night.
Merry Christmas.
Well, Margot, earlier tonight, we disagreed on our interpretation of charity. Silly, wasn't it?
I know what you mean, Lamont.
There should never be a thing called charity. There should never have been the necessity to create the word. In this short span we call our lives, if each man would only realize that every other man has dreams and hopes, this world wouldn't be a topsy-turvy place. Then peace on earth would be a fact. Goodwill would be for every man.
Is that you, Louie?
Oh, yeah, Mr. Cranston.
Have you got a cold?
A box of books.
Box of books? But you brought that inside.
Yeah, but this is another one.
Another one?
Yeah, another one. It's for you, Miss Lane.
You mean it's another puppy?
Yeah, it's my own idea. You see, when I went by the pet shop, and the other pup's brother was in the window, so I went in and I pet him on the head. You know what he done, Mr. Cranston?
No.
He bit my finger. Oh, he's a god. So I had to go and get him for Miss Lane. And I charged him to you, I did.
Yes, Margot.
I'd like to say something.
Why, certainly. What do you want to say?
Merry Christmas to everybody.
Thank you, Margot and Lamont. Today's program is based on a story copyrighted by the Shadow Magazine. The characters, names, places, and plot are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. The Shadow Magazine is on sale at your local newsstand.
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The Shadow knows.
You're listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web with your host, Justine Ward. Family Theater was an inspirational, non-denominational show promoting family unity and prayer. Mutual donated the time for a high-quality program that gave a spiritual message. This is a story of a Christmas miracle translated from its medieval French roots into a touching radio show. Enjoy Family Theater, The Juggler of Our Lady, first broadcast Christmas Day, 1947, on Mutual.
The Broadcasting System, in cooperation with Family Theater Incorporated, presents, transcribed, The Juggler of Our Lady, starring America's beloved baritone, John Charles Thomas, and John Nesbitt. Irene Dunn is your hostess.
More things are wrought by prayer than this world dreams of. At this glorious time of Christmas, there is a feeling of peace and goodwill in the hearts and homes of people everywhere, because the remembrance of Christ's birth brings new hope and happiness into our lives. It means a renewal of our trust and faith in God, a renewal of our prayers for understanding and harmony, harmony in our homes and among the nations of the world. It would be a wonderful world if every day were Christmas, if on all days we had the spirit of giving to make others happy, the spirit of kindness and unselfishness. This is the spirit of Christ, his message to all men, a message of love for one another. And in homes where this spirit reigns, where it is kept in daily remembrance by the practice of daily family prayer, every day has the joy and hope and happiness of Christmas.
Eighteen years ago, John Nesbitt, well-known storyteller of radio and motion pictures, discovered a manuscript written in the original French. Curious, he translated it into modern English, and thereby came across one of the most beautiful and touching folk tales in the world. That exquisite legend is now known to millions of Americans as The Juggler of Our Lady. For several years past, one of the most noted presentations of this timeless story has been the happy combination of John Nesbitt and the distinguished baritone John Charles Thomas. Tonight, Family Theater is honored to perpetuate this traditional Christmas offering with America's beloved baritone John Charles Thomas singing some grand old Christmas songs and speaking some of the lines as well. So here is John Nesbitt's The Juggler of Our Lady with Mr. Nesbitt as narrator. John Charles Thomas will set the scene with a song.
Oh, holy night, the stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in a sin and sorrow pining. Here he appeared and the soul felt its worth. A thrill of hope the weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn. Fall on your knees, O hear
Christ was born. For life divine, for life, for life divine. Truly taught us to love one another. His law is love, and his gospel is shall he break, for the slave is our brother, and in his name all oppression shall cease. Sweet hymns of joy in grateful chorus raise we, let all within us praise his holy name. Christ is the Lord.
In the days when the world was young, there lived in France a little man who didn't amount to anything. Everyone said that he didn't amount to anything, and he firmly believed this himself. For he was just a poor traveling circus entertainer. He was a juggler. He couldn't read or write, and all that he really knew how to do was to go about from town to town following the little country fairs and doing his tricks for the children and earning a few pennies a day. His first name was Barnaby, but of course he was too unimportant to have any last name at all. Now when it was summertime and the weather was sunny and beautiful and the people were strolling around the streets and the young lovers were holding tightly to one another's hands in the park, well, then Barnaby would be very happy, because he would find a clear place in the village square, and he would spread out a strip of old carpet on the cobblestones, and on the carpet he would perform his tricks for the children and the grown-ups alike. Now Barnaby, although he knew that he didn't amount to anything, of course, was a wonderful juggler. You wouldn't believe half the things that man could do. At first, he would only balance a tin pie plate on the tip of his nose. But when the crowd had collected, he would then stand on his head and juggle 6 golden colored balls in the air at the same time, catching them with his foot. And sometimes he would actually stand on his head and juggle 12 sharp knives instead of the golden balls and catch the knives with his feet too. And then the people would applaud and the children would jump up and down with delight and a whole rain of pennies would be thrown down onto Barnaby's carpet.
Oh. Oh. Wonderful!
And at the end of a day's work like this, well, then Barnaby would collect the pennies in his hat, and before wearily resting his aching muscles, he would kneel down reverently and thank God for the hatful of pennies. And always the people would laugh at his simplicity, and everyone would say that Barnaby would never amount to anything. But all this is about the happy days in Barnaby's life, the summer days when the sun was shining and people were willing to toss a penny to a poor juggler. But when winter came, then Barnaby could afford no place even to sleep, and he had to wrap up his juggling equipment in the old carpet and trudge along the muddy roads, begging a chance to sleep a night in a farmer's barn, or entertaining the servants of some rich nobleman in the kitchen in order to get a meal. And Barnaby, of course, being so simple, never thought of complaining about this, for he knew that the winter and the rains were quite as necessary as the spring and the summer. And as he trudged along, he would say to himself, "How could such an ignorant fellow as I ever hope for anything better?" But now I must tell you that one year in France there was a terrible winter. It was the coldest, wettest winter in 100 years. It began raining in October, and there was not a piece of blue big enough to patch a Dutchman's pants with, clear to the end of autumn. Oh, it was a terrible winter, and the poor people just huddled in their thatched huts, and they slowly starved away to nothing. And it is said that the wolves came down out of the mountains, and they ran through the icy streets of Paris itself. And you can imagine what all of this did to the little vaudeville entertainer whom my story is about. On an evening in early December, at the end of a dreary, wet day, poor Barnaby trudged along a winding country road, sad and bent, carrying under his arm the golden balls and the knives wrapped up in an old piece of muddy carpet. And then, as he slopped along in the mud, in over the rain and the wind, a faint sound came to Barnaby's ears. Somebody was coming up that road, and in spite of all the storm and the blizzard, that somebody was singing as happily as if it were a day in June. And Barnaby stopped, and he listened, with the rain running down to the tip of his short little nose. And then, through the mist at last, Barnaby saw a strange sight. Coming slowly around a bend in the road was a fat white mule, and on the mule's back, with his legs sticking almost straight out on each side, well, there was a fine, fat monk. And now and then the young monk would bang the mule's sides with his heel, and then he would go on singing into the storm with all of his might. Barnaby waited, and then as the mule came alongside of Barnaby, he ran along in the mud, while the young monk sang on as cheerfully as a lark.
Comfort and joy, old tidings of...
But all of a sudden the monk stopped, and he looked down, and there, of course, was poor Barnaby, hopping along near the mule's tail and staring up at him. And the monk smiled at him, and he called down,
"Well, there, how would you like that I made a suggestion for you?"
And Barnaby said, with his teeth chattering, "Oh, any sort of suggestion you would care to make, sir, would be very welcome, thank you."
"Well, it's a very cold night. Oh, I have a very good suggestion for you."
"Yes, indeed. Anything you say, sir, would be fine."
"All right, then. How would you like to spend the night where I live, at the monastery?"
"Oh, if I only could. If I only could earn my lodging, of course, sir. But would they let an ignorant fellow like myself even enter such a holy place as your monastery?" And the monk laughed.
"Ignorant. Now just hop on behind me, Brother Juggler, and all three of us, you and the mule and I, will soon be as warm as three bugs in a rug."
"Oh, thank you very much, sir. But I am very ignorant."
"Are we not all ignorant compared to God?"
And that night, sure enough, Barnaby found himself seated at the table in the huge dining room of the monastery. And it was blazing with candles in silver candlesticks, and the table was covered with enormous roasts of fine rare beef, and legs of mutton swimming in gravy, and whole roast pigs with red apples in their mouths, and chicken pies, and enormous cakes covered with crushed almonds, and all the fresh apple cider that you could hold. Although Barnaby, of course, sat down at the very foot of the table below the salt, together with the servants and the beggars, he looked around with the candlelight shining in his eyes, and he thought he'd never seen such a wonderful sight this side of heaven. And then, to cap it all, his own friend the monk, now in a fine dry white robe, but just as merry as ever, I'll tell you, was standing up to sing for all the assembled company.
Good King Wenceslas looked out on the feast of Stephen, when the snow lay round about, deep and crisp and even. Brightly shone the moon that night, though the frost was cruel. When a poor man came in sight, gathering winter fuel.
Where the night is darker now, and the wind blows stronger, fills my heart, I know not how, I can go no longer. Mark my footsteps, my good faith, break them in them boldly, thou shalt find the winter's grace.
Now, as the singer sat down again, suddenly everyone stopped laughing, and they looked at Barnaby, for he had risen, and he was trembling, and now he was running clear around the table, right to where the lordly abbot, who was the head of the monastery, sat at the top, and there Barnaby sank to his knees. Father, grant my prayer. Please let me stay in this wonderful place and work for you. Oh, I cannot hope to become holy, of course, like one of you. I'm too ignorant for that. But let me work in the stables or mop up the kitchen floors and worship in the chapel with you. And the fat, jolly monk who'd met Barnaby on the road, well, he turned kindly to the abbot.
This is a good man. Simple and pure of heart.
And so the abbot nodded, and that night Barnaby was given a cell to sleep in. And he put his carpet with the juggling equipment under the straw mattress. And before he fell asleep, he solemnly swore to himself that never again would he go back to his disgraceful old job of juggling 6 golden balls and 12 sharp knives. And in the days that followed, everyone couldn't help smiling to watch Barnaby work. He would scrub the flagstones of the chicken floor until they were so clean that you could eat off them. And then he would polish the big copper kettles until they shone like gold. And when the chapel bells rang out for services, then he would always creep humbly in by the side door and kneel down alone in a dark corner. And yet, all through those early days, his face shone with happiness from morning to night. Until 2 weeks before Christmas. And then a bewildered expression began to appear upon his simple face. And slowly his joy appeared to turn to misery and despair. For around him he saw every monk busy, preparing a gift to place in the chapel on Christmas Day. Oh, there was Brother Maurice, and he was a painter. And he would take gold and silver and rare enamels and paint exquisite little miniature pictures on the corner of each page of a Bible. And he was working from dawn to darkness to finish this magnificent gift by Christmas Day. And then there was Brother Marbode, who was a sculptor, and he was finishing a statue of Christ. And he spent all his hours in chiseling stone, so that his beard and his eyebrows and his hair were always white with stone dust. And there was Brother Ambrose, who was writing a new hymn, and Brother Joseph, who was composing the music for it. And everywhere that Barnaby went, there were these educated and trained men following their work, and each of them making a beautiful gift to dedicate to God on Christmas Day. And what about Barnaby? He could do nothing. He would go to his tiny cell, and there he would unwrap his old juggling equipment from the carpet, and then he would gaze at it sadly. I am but a rough man, unskilled in art. I can't read or write. All I know how to do is to perform a few tricks. Everybody here has a gift to present except me. And so there was poor Barnaby, sunk deep into sadness and despair. And at nights he could no longer sleep, but tossed on his mattress and looked up at the ceiling overhead. And yet, Christmas morning came at last. And strangely enough, that was the first day in all of that bitter winter that the sun broke out and shone brilliantly. Outside the monastery, the fields of snow glistened like white frosting in a birthday cake. And trudging through the snow, there came dozens of children and their parents from the village. Because on Christmas, of course, the monastery always held open house, and there was food and gifts for everybody. And in the chapel that day, the great stone halls were decked out in pine and red holly berries, and thousands of candles gleamed everywhere, and all the buildings rang with music and songs. And it took 25 of the monks alone just to roll Brother Marbode's great stone statue into the chapel. And then the choir sang the new song that had been written by Brother Ambrose, and every monk went humbly forward to present his gift to God. And where was Barnaby all of this time? Well, he wasn't to be seen anywhere. He stayed right inside his cell, his eyes gleaming with fever, sick and shivering with chill, and tossing on his straw and gazing overhead and muttering over and over again the same words, "Forgive me. I have no gift to offer. I have nothing to give that's worthy. Forgive me." And then a strange and terrible thing happened. A thing that no brother in that great monastery would ever forget during all the days of his life. For that evening, after the visitors had gone home and the chapel was deserted, and nearly all the brothers were asleep on their hard beds, the plump, jolly monk who'd brought Barnaby to the monastery now went running down the halls, and he smiled no more. He was white as a ghost, and he pounded over the stone floors right to the private room of the abbot, and he shoved open the door without knocking, and panting with excitement, he seized the abbot by the arm.
Father, a frightful thing is happening. The most terrible sacrilege ever to take place in our church. Come with me.
Without speaking a word, the abbot joined him, and the two men ran down the corridors. They burst through a door, and they came out on the choir balcony that was at the rear of the chapel. And the monk pointed a trembling finger down toward the altar. And the abbot looked, and he turned white in color. God forgive him, he has gone mad. For down below, squarely in front of the altar, there was Barnaby. And he had spread out his old strip of carpet, and kneeling reverently on one knee, he was actually juggling in the air 6 golden balls. He was presenting his old act and giving it wonderfully. The bright knives, the shining balls, and even the tin pie plate balanced on the tip of his nose. And on his face there was a look of adoration and joy.
"We must seize him and drag him away," cried the abbot.
And the two men turned toward the door. But at that exact moment, a dazzling light suddenly filled the chapel. It was a brilliant beam that came directly from the altar, and both the monks sank to their knees. For as Barnaby had finished his juggling act and knelt exhausted on his carpet, they saw the statue of the Virgin Mary move. And she came down from her pedestal, and coming to where Barnaby knelt, she took the blue hem of her robe and touched it to his forehead, gently drying the perspiration that glistened there. And the light dimmed. And up in the choir balcony, the brother who had befriended Barnaby smiled again now with deep happiness, and he turned and he spoke very quietly to the abbot.
God has accepted the only gift he had to make. Blessed are the simple in heart, for they too shall see God.
Family Theater has presented John Charles Thomas and John Nesbitt in Mr. Nesbitt's The Juggler of Our Lady. Now, here is our hostess for this evening, Irene Dunn.
It is over 1900 and some 40 years ago that the Christ child was born in the little town of Bethlehem. He came into a cold, God-forgetting world where might was right and where the poor and weak were oppressed. He came not in grandeur and power, but in humility and poverty, and in the helplessness of infancy. And yet his birth brought the dawn of a new day, for the Son of God became man and gave to all men a new dignity and true brotherhood. Yes, whenever and wherever men have lived according to his law of love of God and love of fellow men, there has been peace and happiness and a new prosperity. It is when people or homes or nations forget God, forget the love of fellow men, that unhappiness, hatred, oppression, and war come to the world. That is why it is so important that our homes, that all homes, should have the daily remembrance and expression of our love of God in the daily practice of family prayer. For in true love for one another, a family that prays together stays together. This is Irene Dunn saying, good night, and God bless you.
Before saying goodnight, we'd like to thank John Charles Thomas and John Nesbitt for their performances this evening, and Mr. Nesbitt also for his fine translation of this famous medieval legend. Our thanks to Max Terra for his music, and to the Ken Darby Singers. This production of Family Theater Incorporated was directed by David Young. This series of Family Theater broadcasts is made possible by the thousands of you who felt the need for this kind of program, and by a friend of the New York Foundling Hospital, which cares for homeless and motherless babies without distinction of race, creed, or color. Today's program was transcribed. Tony Locrano speaking.
You've been listening to the Old Time Radio Hour broadcast each week over the World Wide Web. You can subscribe at no charge through Apple Podcasts, Podbean, or RSS. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you can join us again next week for more holiday cheer from the golden age of radio. Until then, this is your host, Justine Ward, saying so long for now.